Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show for you today. My guest will be Megan Miller. She's the founder of a company called Biddy Foods, which is a high-protein, gluten-free company that produces bakery items using cricket flour. Yep, that's right, cricket flour. And I will tell you more about her in just a little bit. But first, I want to go over some things going on in and around the news and some events going on in New York that you might want to participate in. So let's just get started. First, this weekend, July 25th, Long Ireland's Pintwood Derby is happening out at the Long Island Brewery in Riverhead. That's from 5:30 to 8. And that is going to be derby race and local craft beers. So if you're interested, check that out at the Long Island Beer Company. Also this weekend, July 26th, Gary Null will be at the Cinema Arts Center at 12 noon showing his new documentary called Saving the Planet, One Bite at a Time. And, you know, Gary's great. He's going to be there in person. And this new documentary is really very, very important to see. So if you can make it, please come on out and show your support for that. July 27th, Slow Food New York City is having their Manhattan Slur at the East Pole. And every month they have what they call the Manhattan Slur. And it's just an opportunity to meet Slow Food members and board members and to network and meet each other. So it's always free. This one is at the East Pole on East 65th Street in Manhattan. So come out to that. Shelburne Farms up in Vermont, which is a great organic farm. I took a workshop there on the ABCs of education, farm-to-table education, and it was great. They're having a five-day workshop with people from around the country all about education for sustainability. And I really recommend that if that's your passion, if that's what you want to do and that's what you want to teach, that this would be a really great opportunity to enhance all of your knowledge and to meet people that are really doing it already. July 30th, another beer event at the Hudson Mercantile in Manhattan on 36th Street, and Edible East End is the organizer for that. The North Fork Craft Beer Festival. Whoa, lots of beer opportunities this month. That's at Calverton Links Golf Course. And August 8th, the Long Island Farm Tours. And that is something that I'm personally involved in, the Long Island Food Coalition, which IE Green and Slow Food North Shore are a part of. They are organizing, along with many other organizations, a farm tour of North Shore Nassau County farms. And many people don't even know that there are North Shore Nassau County farms, and we'll go visit three of them, three very different farms that have different ways of approaching it. One is a hands-on young adult farm for young adults who have challenges, and they grow the food and they give it to food pantries. Another one is Young's Farm, which has been a many-generation farm here on Long Island, and one of the young members of the family is taking it over and transitioning it towards organic. Another one is Three Castle Farms, which is a small, independent organic farm that is supplying some local farmers markets as well as a small CSA program. And then the bus will be traveling by coach bus from farm to farm, and then the bus will stop at IE Green Homestead for a farm-to-table lunch. So it's $50 for one ticket or $90 for two. Tickets are available on the Long Island Food Conference website. Or I have information on my website as well, so you can find out about all of these things on my website as well. Sunday, August 9th is the Long Island Potato Festival, also out at Calverton Links. August 12th, there's a great gelato class that Slow Food New York City is sponsoring. I've actually signed up to go. I'm really excited to experience making lots of different gelatos and find out the difference between ice cream, gelato, and sorbet and what ingredients go into a high-quality gelato. So that's sponsored by Slow Food New York City, and it should be really a fun event. And then August 16th, actually first August 14th to 16th, NOFA is having their summer conference. That's the Northeast Organic Farming Association. They're having a summer conference at UMass in Amherst, and every summer they have their summer conference. And it's a great all weekend from August 14th through the 16th. Lots of workshops, lots of fun events going on, movies, music, really a great event. So if you can make that, that's great. August 16th, I am doing another yoga and farm-to-table cooking retreat, and I want to just share with you that this past weekend, I had a great event here. It was also a yoga and farm-to-table cooking retreat. We cooked a lot of seasonal foods. We harvested right out in the garden. We started with a yoga class with teacher Leslie Luft, who is the founder of Absolute Yoga in Woodbury, and then moved on to kirtan. We had Carol Brill doing some chanting here, and that was wonderful. And then we went into the garden, harvested vegetables, cooked and ate a farm-to-table dinner, and it was really, really great. And so I'm really happy to say that I'm having another one August 16th. This one, the teacher will be Lorelei Henry, who teaches all across Nassau County. She is the teacher at Old Westbury Gardens, where I do yoga every Thursday and Saturday. And then again, we will be chanting and harvesting vegetables. And this one will be a vegetarian Indian feast. So if you want to learn how to make some delicious vegan Indian food, come on out to that on August 16th. And of course, you can sign up right on my website. Crossroads is having their first annual folk festival. Crossroads Farm is in Malvern. It's one of the oldest farms in Nassau County. And that's on August 16th from 1:30 to 8:30 in the evening. And there will be music, food, and craft vendors, and it should be a great event. So if you can make it to that, please do. I also want to talk to you about some things that I would like you to consider taking action in. I always have things that you can take action on my website as part of my blog. I have something that's called In the News and something that's called Take Action. And I always talk to people about getting involved in your local politics, but also just in general, our national politics. And there's a very disturbing piece of legislation that is being voted on right now called the Monsanto Protection Act. And this is a piece of legislation that would prevent states from having their own mandatory GMO labeling laws, just like Vermont's. It would prevent the FDA from establishing a national mandatory GMO labeling program. And it would also block, we would block companies from being able to say that non-GMO foods are better than GMO ones. It's just really bad. It just protects Monsanto and shows where our loyalties lie as far as our government goes, and we really have to not let that happen. So please, please sign on to that petition. It's really important. Also, there's a petition to not allow mining on sacred Native American land in Arizona. Also really, really important. You know, we have moved the American Indians, Native Americans all over this country, and the minute we think that there's something valuable on the land that we put them on, we just go right in and take it again, and it's just not right. And I think I mentioned, you know, a few last month or the month before when I was in Milan at the World's Fair, and I went to the U.S. Pavilion. It was the only time I really saw, you know, the U.S. try to market the Native American approach, saying, you know, we live in harmony with Mother Earth. And that just couldn't be farther from the truth. So, you know, this trying to mine on sacred Native American land is more often the angle we take when it comes to treatment of our Native Americans. So please sign that petition. And then there's another petition to tell Governor Jerry Brown to end fracking and oil extraction in California, which is just absurd. I can't believe that they even allow it on the San Andreas Fault. There is fracking going on, and we have seen that fracking causes earthquakes, let alone in a place that has their own earthquakes. So please sign on to that, and you know, let your voice be heard. Also in the news, and I've seen this before, and then, you know, it goes out of the news and you just forget about it, but I was reading about it again and just has me livid, is that large conventional or factory farm dairy farms that are selling organic milk are allowed to buy conventional cattle and instantly turn them into organic cows. And obviously they're not organic unless they really have been raised in gestation organic. So you can't just have a cow born to a conventional, or a calf being born to a conventional cow, and take that calf from the mother and put it on an organic farm and call it organic. It just doesn't work that way. And yet that is what a lot of these industrial scale organic dairies are doing. So we need to, you know, make sure that the Organic Standards Board, which was put into place to protect the organic standards, is really being infiltrated and being weakened. And we need to all do what we can to turn that around. And education and finding out about this is really the start. So please look into that. The Environmental Working Group is really involved in this, or the Cornucopia Institute. You can go to their website and learn more about that. Also, we all know that bees are in danger. Last week I talked about France had finally, they outlawed the neonicotinoids from being allowed to be sold in France. I'd love to see our country doing the same thing. Bees are really, really in dire straits, and it's also affecting the bats and the birds and the butterflies. These neonicotinoids are bad. We need to get them off the market, and we need to help bring back the bees. You know, when we have our beehives split and they, you know, go back out into nature, it's, you know, one of the happiest moments for us to know that we've really helped to replenish beehives out there. And, we all just need to do what we can to help the bees and the birds and the butterflies. So, not using any neonicotinoids like Roundup and pesticides that are in danger to the bees, please do not use them, and please spread the word so that other people don't use them as well. And then, of course, vaccinations are still in the news, and we really need to, again, educate ourselves about that so that we don't just believe what's in the news. We need to really look at where the information is coming from. Right now, there is a mandatory vaccination law being enacted in California, where it's mandatory that everybody get a vaccination if they want to go to public school in California. And what actually happened, you know, one of the studies that I read about, when there was the whooping cough outbreak in 2012, 90% of the children that got that whooping cough had been vaccinated. And when there was the outbreak of the measles in California last year, many of the people that got the measles had been vaccinated. And the chances are that the people that caught the measles caught it from someone who had been recently vaccinated. You know, for 2 weeks after you get vaccinated, you can infect people. And it's more likely that that's where the infection came from. So you really, again, have to look at all the pieces of the news, see where it's coming from, and really do the research and follow the money, because it's just amazing how they try to hide who's funding the different research. But it's not transparent. But if you really look into it, very often the people that are coming out with the research, it might not be, you know, one funder back, but it might be a couple funders back. The money is coming from the pharmaceutical company or the biotech company or the, you know, the Monsanto type company. So you really need to look at where the money is coming from. So that's it. Now I'd like to share with you my recipe. My recipe this week is a miso glazed tofu with shiitake mushrooms and bok choy. And then I'll be bringing Megan Miller on.
And you first want to make a marinade. And for the marinade, you're going to need 3 tablespoons of red miso, 1 tablespoon of brown sugar, 1 tablespoon of sake, and 1 tablespoon of mirin. So you're just making a little marinade that you're going to marinate the tofu in. And I've been buying lately a block of tofu that instead of coming in a lot of liquid, it comes in plastic. It's a 20-ounce firm cake of tofu. And I cut that into 15 slices, but it's really quite firm, and it's great if you're trying to make cutlets. So I cut those into 15 slices. Each one was about 1/4 inch thick. Then I had 1 onion that I sliced into crescent moons, 2 carrots that I julienned, 1 leek washed well. The dark green tops I remove, and then I slice them up. And leeks, you have to be really careful. Separate the different pieces because the dirt really hides in the crevices there. So wash it well. I had about 14 large shiitake mushrooms that I took off the stems and sliced up, 1 head of bok choy that I chopped, 4 cloves of garlic minced, 1 2-inch piece of ginger that I grated, some olive oil for the stir fry, 2 teaspoons of dark sesame oil, and then 1 cup of breadcrumbs or panko flakes. I had breadcrumbs, but if I had had panko flakes, I might have used them. Panko flakes just are even a little crispier. And what I wanted was I wanted these cutlets to really be crisp to contrast the vegetables that I was going to put on it. So you start by blending up the marinade in a small mini food processor. Reserve 2 tablespoons that you're going to use later in with the vegetables. But then the rest of the marinade, you want to marinate both sides of the tofu. So I first laid the slices of tofu out on a clean dish towel and covered them with another dish towel and just pressed down lightly to remove any excess water. And then I spread half of the remaining marinade on top of the slices of tofu, and then I turn them upside down and put them onto a cookie sheet, or you can put them into a casserole pan so that the marinade side is facing down and the top has no marinade on it. And then I use the other half of the marinade and spread that on top of the tofu slices. And I let that sit while I was prepping all the other vegetables and doing the stir fry. So that was about 30 minutes that they got to marinate. If you think of this ahead of time and you know you're going to make it, you can always let it marinate even longer. The longer it marinates, probably the better, because as most of us know, tofu has no flavor of its own, so it takes on whatever flavor you give it. So the longer it can marinate, the better. So you're going to start by sauteing the onion and olive oil with the garlic and ginger and cook it until the onion's translucent, then add the carrots. This is the same routine I do all the time. You always start with your root vegetables because they take longer to cook, and then you add the vegetables according to how long they need to cook. So after the carrots, I added the leeks and let that cook down for about 5 minutes. Then I added the shiitake mushrooms. And when the shiitake mushrooms began to soften, that's when I added the bok choy. And I added to that the reserved marinade and the teaspoon of, or 2 teaspoons of the dark sesame oil. And that was it. Finish stir frying it, remove it from the heat. Then you're going to now cook up the tofu. And so the tofu's been marinating for a half an hour. I dip the tofu into the breadcrumbs. So I use a pie pan to put the breadcrumbs in. The miso that's on the tofu stays on the tofu, and it acts as glue, kind of, for the breadcrumbs to stick to. So you just dip both sides of the tofu cutlet into the breadcrumbs, and I sauteed it in some olive oil in my cast iron frying pan until they all got crispy. And when they're golden brown on both sides, you remove them. And, of course, the heat's never even, so you just move them around so that it gets golden brown everywhere. So things that were in the middle, I move them to the side and move other ones to the middle, kind of do that dance until it's all golden brown. And then remove it and place it onto a piece of paper towel to absorb any excess oil. And then I served it with the vegetables right down on top of the crispy tofu cutlets. And it was just great. It was really great. The vegetables, you don't want to overcook, so that there's still a little crunch to the bok choy. And the tofu had a really nice crunch to it, and it was just great. And you can also garnish it with some sesame seeds if you'd like, which just looks nice. And that's it. So I hope you all make it. Give me feedback. Of course, the recipe will be posted on the PRN website and my website. And now it's my pleasure to introduce my guest, Megan Miller. She is the founder of Biddy Foods, which is a company that is actually creating flour made from crickets. And I know it doesn't sound so appetizing, but I think after our conversation together, you will see the wisdom in this business and the sustainability potential that this has. So, Megan, are you with me?
Yes. Hi, Bhavani.
Hi, Megan. Thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
Good. So I wanted to, rather than go into a lot of detail with your own biography, I wanted you to really tell us what first inspired you. You know, how did you first get introduced to the idea of insects as food, and what inspired you to start Biddy Foods?
Well, so I became interested in edible insects through travel, first of all. I was doing some traveling around Southeast Asia where edible insects are a regular part of the diet, and you can find insects at street food vendors pretty much everywhere. And I started to think it was interesting from a cultural perspective that people in Southeast Asia eat insects, but that they're not considered food here. And I went online and I started doing some research, and I learned that 80% of the world's cultures already eat insects, and it's really only North America and Europe that are the holdouts. And as I dug in a little bit, I learned that edible insects are actually extremely sustainable. They're one of the most ecologically friendly protein sources that we have on Earth. So I started thinking about how it might be possible to incorporate edible insects into the American diet, and I realized that it's probably a stretch to get most people to eat whole insects at this point, and that the best way to get people to try this new food would be to turn the insects into a powder and to incorporate that into familiar foods. So that's what we're doing at Biddy Foods. We're making a whole line of food products that all include cricket protein as the key ingredient.
It's amazing. And so when you were in Asia, were they creating flour and baked goods from insects, or was that completely your idea?
Yeah, that is actually our innovation. That's not something that's being done in Southeast Asia. They usually just eat the insects whole. So when you go to street food stands, you'll find, you know, alongside shrimp, which are actually a really close relative of crickets, you might find, you know, fried or sautéed crickets or grasshoppers, and they're fried up with chilies and lime and lemongrass and things like that. And they're really quite delicious. And if you start to think about it, they really don't look so different from some of the foods we already eat that are related in the arthropod, you know, crustacean family, like shellfish. Shrimp and soft-shell crabs are actually pretty closely related to crickets.
Wow. What was your first reaction to eating insects?
Honestly, the first time I ever ate insects, I was in Oaxaca in Mexico, and there they do actually powder insects and mix them into spices. So the first insect that I ever tried was in Oaxaca, and it was in the form of a seasoned salt on the rim of a cocktail. And it was just delicious.
Oh, my God, really?
And I asked what the salt was made from, and I said I wasn't understanding correctly because my Spanish isn't that great, and there were some worms. And then I realized they really did mean worms, and they had taken a certain kind of insect larvae and fried it and then powdered it and mixed it in with chilies and salt, and it was just delicious. And that's one of the interesting things. There are many insects, and they can be very culinarily interesting. Crickets are very mild and neutral flavored. They pretty much taste like nuts. So for us, that's really great because it gives them a great versatility to be used as an ingredient across a wide variety of recipes. So we use cricket powder in a baking flour that we've developed, which you can use to make everything from cakes and muffins to crackers to breads, and it works just like regular baking flour, but it has no wheat or any grains at all in it.
Wow, so that really satisfies the gluten-free craze that is hitting America as well, huh?
Yeah, it does, and also the paleo craze, because what we end up having is you're substituting the grains in a recipe for something that's really high protein, and you're adding a lot more nutrition, and you're taking out some of the foods that may irritate some people.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when you toast them before or cook them before making them into a flour, you're not breading them or anything. You're just taking them as they are and heating them up, right?
Yeah. So the process that we use to make our powder, so we get the crickets from farmers, and we wash them in a boiling water bath. And then they go into a dehydrator, and they get fully dehydrated until they're very crispy. And then they go through a grain mill, similarly to the way that you would mill wheat if you were going to do that on a large scale. And then we blend the crickets with our proprietary blend of other ingredients, which include cassava and coconut, and we arrive at this really nice grain-free mixture that has the baking properties that you would expect to make something, you know, like bread or cookies or cakes.
Mm-hmm. So it's the boiling bath that kills the crickets. You're not putting them into the oven alive.
Oh, absolutely not. No, in fact, because they're cold-blooded animals, we actually are able to humanely kill the crickets by putting them into the walk-in freezer. So because they're cold-blooded, their body temperatures go down as soon as they're exposed to cold, and they become sort of anesthetized. So the way, for instance, children in Mexico who are collecting crickets or grasshoppers for their families to eat, the way that they harvest insects is they go out into the field early in the morning, and they can just pick up the grasshoppers out of the field while they're still, you know, they're sitting very still because it's very cold in the morning, and they haven't, you know, warmed up. They're basically hibernating. Mm-hmm. And we use that same process to harvest our crickets. So they go from being in a bin at the farm into a walk-in freezer to chill them down. And they go from being anesthetized or hibernating to, you know, being killed, and then mm-hmm. we, once they're already killed, that's when we put them into the hot water bath.
Mm-hmm. And you raise them yourself, or you, or there's actually places locally that raise crickets?
Yeah, there are actually several farmers in the U.S. who are starting to raise crickets specifically for human consumption, and they are raising them on organic feed for us. So, yeah, we don't raise our own crickets at this mm-hmm. point. But it's really interesting. This is a new emerging industry, but we're seeing a lot of evidence that this is going to be a big food trend, and that we're going to see insect protein incorporated into many foods as a sustainable protein. So there will probably be more and more cricket farms in the next few years.
Wow, fascinating. So So are crickets, do they taste different than other insects? I mean, do different insects have different flavors? The way, like, shrimp tastes different than scallops, for instance. Do bugs
yes.
taste different?
Yes, absolutely. So crickets taste really mild. They sort of just taste like nuts. And there are other insects that have even more of an earthy flavor, like more of a mushroomy flavor. Ants, for instance, can taste sort of vinegary, or some of them taste a little bit like citrus. So sometimes there are actually chefs who are starting to use them in fine dining contexts. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with Noma, but it's been named the number sure. one restaurant in the world in Copenhagen. And Rene Redzepi is extremely interested in using edible insects, the chef there. So he uses ants that have sort of a citrus pop. So you eat them and they sort of pop in your mouth with a little burst of lemon. So there's some really interesting insects to eat out there. And there are actually 1,900 different species of insects that are eaten by humans all over the world. And we're just really focusing on only crickets because we want to get people comfortable and familiar with an insect that is a relatively friendly and familiar one. So we're just using one species of insect at our company.
Right. Like, I don't think people would go for, you know, cockroach flower.
No.
Or something like that.
Maybe not.
So at what point in your travels to Latin America and Asia did you first come up with this idea? And it's eaten, you said, equally as much in Latin America as in Asia?
Well, I think it's probably eaten more in Southeast Asia. There's people who basically use insects as their main form of protein in places like Cambodia and some parts of Thailand. In the north of Thailand, I think there's something like 20,000 different cricket farms. And there's a certain region of northern Thailand where there's already sort of a insect trade, and they ship them all over the world. We use insects that are grown in the U.S., but there's sort of a thriving edible insect industry in Thailand and Cambodia already. And in Latin America, it's pretty regional, actually. There's definitely a dish that is some sort of little larvae that are sort of similar to caviar that you can find in Mexico City. But the main thing that you see is in the state of Oaxaca, there's a dish called chapulines, which are marinated grasshoppers. And you can find them served as snacks in a lot of bars and restaurants, or sometimes served in tacos. And they're marinated with chili and lime, and they're really delicious. They've sort of got that, you know, that fried, you know, kind of pop in your mouth with, like, delicious grease that you would get from, like, a soft-shell crab. Mm-hmm. But they've also got, like, lime and chili and salt, and they're really tasty.
Wow. What do crickets eat? Do you know?
So, yeah, crickets are omnivores, and out in the wild they eat smaller insects, and they also eat some plants. They're not like grasshoppers in that they'll destroy crops, though. Like, grasshoppers, when they swarm, that's where you get the idea of swarms of locusts, and they sort of get a critical mass, and they start to destroy crops. Crickets don't do that. And the interesting thing is, when they're grown in captivity, they, because they're omnivores and they have a relatively broad diet, you can feed them waste fruits and vegetables, so they can actually become a part of the waste stream at a farm. You can feed them the fruits and vegetables, you know, the seconds that you might not be able to sell at the farmer's market, and feed them to your cricket. And then the cricket's waste is very minimal. They're one of the most efficient converters of feed out there. So where you would feed, you know, 10 pounds of feed to a cow, and you would get about 9 pounds of, or sorry, you get 1 pound of beef back. You could feed that same amount to a cricket, and you would get 9 pounds of cricket back. So they use almost all of the feed that you give them, and the waste, the cricket poop, is actually already composted, similar to worm castings. It's actually a very valuable compost that you can put directly on your garden. So, yeah, it's a very interesting part of a farm system.
I have a question. How has the reaction been to, you know, from Americans in eating your foods, and especially with vegetarians? Like, I'm wondering if, you know, people that are vegetarians, you know, when they think of animals like cows and pigs and they don't want to kill them, how do they feel when it comes to crickets?
Well, first of all, from a broader perspective, you know, we were expecting this to be something that takes some time to educate people on. And as you may remember, I spoke at TEDx Manhattan last year, and we didn't yet have our cookies for sale yet. But the response was so huge. We got so much great media attention that people started asking us for the cookies, even though we didn't have them yet. So we started accepting pre-orders on our website and selling the cookies in advance, even before they were ready. And so people pre-ordered the cookies, and we did our first shipments off of our website in May. And we've just had really steady orders from all corners of the country since then. So, like, you would think that this is sort of a coastal phenomenon. I live in California, and it seems like a very California thing, or maybe a progressive, you know, tri-state area sort of thing. But we've been really thrilled that we're getting orders from all corners of the country. And in fact, we've been getting orders from all over the world, too. Our second biggest markets after the U.S. are Scandinavia and Australia. So that's super exciting. And yeah, and so we think we're going to grow much faster than we initially expected. It seems like people are much more open to trying this food faster than we even anticipated. And I think it's because people are becoming more aware of where their food comes from and more interested in understanding the sustainability impact of their food. So we've got a lot of progressive early adopters who are interested in this. And when it comes to vegetarians, it's a really interesting question. I would say it's divided down the middle, 50-50. There are some people who are even vegans who have said to me, well, you know, I'd be okay with eating insects because they're low enough on the food chain and because they are so sustainable. Because actually crickets in certain respects are even more sustainable than some of our vegetable proteins. When it comes to water consumption, out here in California, we've been having this historic drought. And I've been seeing these crazy statistics, like almonds take up 10% of California's water usage. And, you know, crickets use hardly any water at all. They use about, it takes about a gallon of water to grow a pound of crickets. So for people, you know, that find those sorts of statistics interesting, they might be willing to try eating insects. Of course, a lot of people are vegetarians for moral reasons, and you can't forget that crickets are animals. So if you're a person who just has a, you know, moral sensitivity to the idea of killing animals, then, yeah, totally respect that. In that case, you may want to keep just feeding vegetable protein, and that's a good choice, too.
So I know you started with the baked items. Do you see yourself down the road expanding into more savory items with the crickets or other types of insects?
Well, I think we're going to stick with crickets for the time being because we're really building a nice brand around, you know, one particular insect that people can become really familiar and comfortable with. But when it comes to making other food products, we're definitely not going to just be a cookie company. We're really interested in the idea that we can improve the nutrition of all the foods we eat, particularly staple foods and snack foods. And cricket protein can be a really nice ingredient in everything from, you know, bread to tortillas to different staple foods. You can make pasta with it. I mean, really the sky's the limit. So we're looking at the next possibilities. We've been experimenting with some interesting things in our test kitchen, and crickets really do taste great in a savory context. We've made some really delicious crackers with them, for instance, that we've served at some events. And, yeah, I think really the sky's the limit. So right now we're pretty focused on our cookies, but we're looking to expand to additional products that you'll probably see in markets later in 2015.
Mm-hmm. And I know, like you mentioned, that you were at TEDx, and when checking out your website, it's amazing how much media attention you have already been getting, from news broadcasts to, you know, TEDx and, I don't know, a whole bunch of different, you know, people really looking at your foods and seeing it as, you know, the next wave of product. And I think, you know, the fact that it is gluten-free, and that is right now, you know, as a foodie myself, you know, I see that that is one of the largest, fastest-growing segments of the food market. And so, like you said, if you can get into making pasta, you're right, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, and I think we have been super fortunate in terms of the amount of media attention, but it really is a compelling story. And I think, you know, people in the media are always looking for an interesting and exciting new hook. And it sounds a little crazy to talk about eating insects because it's unexpected. And, you know, I think up until we came along, pretty much the sort of the energy around eating edible insects was very much a fear factor sort of thing, like, this is wild and crazy and adventurous. And we're trying to completely, like, turn that paradigm around and say, no, really, it's not so crazy. Like, I'll be pretty happy when people think that crickets are, you know, a boring ingredient, like just similar to wheat, because really they're very easy to come by and plentiful, and they could be something that we eat every single day. So we're creating a brand that is very friendly and approachable, and particularly interesting to women. Like, the vast majority of our customers are women, and that's a very new and interesting twist, because I think previously most people who were interested in insects were certainly men, and interested maybe for the adventuresome nature of it, or maybe because of the protein. A lot of people who are interested in fitness might be looking for those high-protein foods. But we've been getting a lot of interest from moms who just want to get more healthy alternative snacks and cookies for their kids. So we're focused on moms and kids and creating a really beautiful and approachable brand that's different from what's been seen before in this space.
Right. When I was looking at your history, I was very interested in the fact that you actually, were you a pastry chef in a restaurant, or you worked in the pastry kitchen? Can you share with us your history?
Yeah, so my history is a little bit unconventional. I actually was a journalist, and I was dating a chef, and I was working part-time in a pastry kitchen in a fine dining restaurant, and sort of my plan B was, like, if this journalism thing doesn't pan out, maybe I will, you know, focus on food instead, because that's always been a passion of mine. And actually, the journalism thing panned out just fine. I was an editor for many years at some top magazines in New York, and I just got really interested in this particular trend, and it was something I couldn't stop talking about. And eventually, I sort of had to follow this passion and see if it could succeed. So that's basically how I ended up switching careers and getting into creating an edible insect food company.
Mm-hmm. And are you the chef in the kitchen at your company?
I am actually not. So we recently signed on a really incredible chef, Tyler Flores. He is a chef on the Food Network that people may know from some of his television shows. And he also has a couple of restaurants here in the Bay Area. So he's our executive chef. And we also have a couple of other really talented cooks that we've brought on. And although I did some of the initial recipe development, we've got some people who are much better at it than I am now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, you're out there talking it up and being the face that everybody recognizes behind Biddy Foods. So you can't do it all, right?
That's right, yeah.
Good. So where do you see yourself going in the next 5 years with Biddy Foods?
So, you know, our aim is to grow the company and to create a range of food products that we can introduce that all contain this really sustainable and healthful ingredient, and to get it into the mainstream. We're really excited to be reaching the early adopter community of people who are interested in sustainability and health. But in order for this food trend to make a real impact, and, you know, there was this huge United Nations paper that suggested that edible insects could have the potential to stabilize the global food supply. But in order for that to happen, many millions of people need to start eating insects. And so we want to introduce foods that are based on edible insects to as many people as possible. So we want to maintain our principles of making super eco-friendly foods, and we want to try to get them out to as many people as possible and get them into mainstream retailers. So that's what we're going to be trying to do in the next 5 years, is get these products out to as many people as possible.
Right, right. And I know you mentioned that you could make pasta with it. Have you been successful at that yet? Because I would think that would be a really great, you know, especially if moms want to get it into kids. It's a food that, you know, kids traditionally always love. And if, you know, the high-protein pastas, you know, have become very popular, and this would just be even, I think, a much higher-protein pasta.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, we've had some success just making pasta in our test kitchen, and that's definitely one of the things that we're looking at for the future. So, you know, we don't have that productized yet, but it's fun to work with in the test kitchen, and hopefully we'll move it further along in the near future.
Mm-hmm. But you're going to stay with the, for now, your idea is to stay with creating the insects or the crickets into flour and then making products from the flour as opposed to the insects themselves?
Definitely. I don't think that that's going to be a part of the Bitty brand to serve whole insects. I know there are definitely some chefs that are interested in that angle, but we think the best way to get people familiar with and comfortable with the idea of eating insects is to remove any barriers. And, you know, the barriers that people might have are the creepy crawly factor. So we just completely remove that by turning the insects into a powder. And then it's really no different than any other protein powder or baking flour that you might see. So that's definitely where we're going to focus.
Mm-hmm. And are you making a protein powder?
Well, no, I just mean, the high protein insect powder. Yeah.
Right. No, because I was just wondering, I know you said you dehydrate the, you know, rather than really baking them in the oven, you dehydrate them. And that's like another big food trend is the dehydrating and the raw food movement. So I didn't know if, you know, usually raw food is vegetarian. But I didn't know if there was going to be some crossover there, whether, you know, if it was dehydrated and, you know, many of the people who are into raw are making, you know, drinks in the morning, you know, green drinks and stuff like that and putting in these protein powders. And I didn't know if that was a product that you could see the crickets filling as well.
Well, I think there's definitely a lot of potential there. And, you know, one of the interesting things about it is that the insect protein would be a really sustainable alternative to others out there. But right now, as it stands, the cricket powder isn't totally soluble. It's got other good stuff in it, like fiber and omega-3 fatty acids. And if we wanted to make a protein isolate, that's probably a possibility too. But what we're really focused on is making whole foods that are staple foods, like not nutraceuticals. And I know there are some other brands out there that are working on specifically the fitness industry, and they're probably more interested in making, you know, smoothie powders and things like that. But that's not something we're currently doing, although it is a good idea.
Mm-hmm. And on your website, you have these things that look like little sprout balls or little balls with nuts in them. What are those?
Oh, those were a treat that we made for an event, but we don't really sell those. The cool thing about our flour is that it's versatile in a lot of different contexts. So that was just like a little cookie ball that we made for an event once.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they look really interesting, but they almost look like they could have crickets right in them, like those little things in there could be crickets. So I think, you know, some people might be nervous about eating those.
Right.
So
yeah.
What products are your biggest sellers right now?
Our biggest seller by far is our chocolate chip cookies. We actually have a bunch of recipes on our website if people are interested in testing out things for themselves. We do sell the baking flour on our website, and we've got a bunch of recipes for making different treats at home, like those balls.
Why don't you share with everybody what your website is so that they can check that out?
Sure. It's bittyfoods.com, BittyFoods.
Great. And you also have the chocolate cardamom cookies that look really delicious. I mean, cardamom is one of those spices that I love, but it's not as versatile in this country as, you know, a lot of other spices. But I think it's great to bring that in, you know. Chai tea has brought that more mainstream, I think.
Right, yeah. Our other two flavors besides the chocolate chip cookies are orange ginger and chocolate cardamom. And those are both, you know, they tie for second and third position in terms of popularity. But People just love the classic chocolate chip, and I think it's because it gives you sort of a reference and something that you're familiar with, and you can go, oh, this really isn't all that different from a regular chocolate chip cookie. It's just a really tasty cookie.
Mm-hmm. And do you know, as far as like nutritional value, if you were comparing your chocolate chip cookie to a more traditional one, you know, how much more protein does it have and how many less carbs, that kind of thing? Do you know that?
I sure do. Yeah, our cookies have twice the protein and half the sugar of your average cookies. So each serving of cookies has 5 grams of protein, which is similar to most, you know, energy bars out there. And there's no refined sugars. We use coconut sugar, and we use only good fats. They're full of coconut oil. So we try to make the most wholesome cookies that we can while still making them really delicious.
That's great. That's great. I didn't even realize that. So they're really, you know, good for you on many different levels. And you said it's completely grain-free and refined sugar-free. That's great.
Yep.
That's
we
great.
Like them.
Okay, well, I'm going to order some. And anybody out there listening, if you want to give them a try, the response has been really tremendous from everything that I read, and your TEDx talk is great. Which, how do people find that? Just they can search your name, Megan Miller, TEDx Manhattan.
Yeah, that's right, and it's up on YouTube.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thanks, Megan. It's been really wonderful having you on, and you know, I wish you all the best. I mean, I think Bitty Foods is really on to something, and I'm sure in 5 years you will be in all the mainstream stores. Have you gotten any response from Whole Foods yet? Are they interested?
Well, we haven't talked to them yet, but we're going to soon. Hopefully later in 2015. We'll see.
Yeah, I would think, you know, both Whole Foods and the Trader Joe's market would be really right up your alley.
That would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks again for joining us. And it's been a pleasure. And everybody out there who's been listening, check them out online. Bitty, is it Bitty Foods? Yes, bittyfoods.com.
Great. Thanks so much, Bhavani.
You're welcome. And remember that coming up this weekend is the next TEDx Manhattan, Changing the Way We Eat. And if you can't make it to the actual event, do check out one of the live screenings that are around the country, and you can find locations of that by going to TEDxManhattan.org, and you can find out a whole listing of that. And then please save the date for March 29th for the second annual film feast in 5 courses, and then also for the Long Island Food Conference that's coming up on April 25th. And for all of you out there, thank you so much for joining us. It's been wonderful being with you here this Thursday, and I will see you again next week. Have a great one. Bye for now.